This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Ohio voters will decide in November whether to keep Democratic incumbent Sherrod Brown in the U.S. Senate or replace him with Republican Bernie Moreno. And the outcome of that vote could have a lasting impact on climate policy in the U.S. and around the world. Joining me now to talk about why that is, our Inside Climate News Midwest reporter, Dan Guarino. Thanks for being here, Dan. And University of Cincinnati Associate Professor of Political Science, David Niven. Welcome back, David.
Thank you, Lucy.
UC is a financial supporter of Cincinnati Public Radio. David, talk about the two men campaigning in Ohio's U.S. Senate race. There's, as I mentioned, the Democratic incumbent, Senator Sherrod Brown, the Republican challenger, Bernie Moreno. Give us a brief understanding of who these two are and what their politics are.
Well, as it pertains to this issue, you know, Sherrod Brown is not an environment-first Democrat. He's a jobs-first Democrat, but the environment probably comes in second in that equation. So he has a strong pro-environmental record, a strong record on climate change. It isn't certainly at the tip-top of the Senate. But the contrast here is really, really stark with his opponent, Bernie Moreno, the Republican. Moreno has literally called for eliminating all efficiency standards in cars. So He's basically calling for a return of the 1970s, you know, gas guzzling, you know, moving boat out there on the streets. So when you look at, for example, the report card scores that environmental groups issue, Sherrod Brown is somewhere around a 90% or pro-environment. His other senator from Ohio, J.D. Vance, ranks at 0%. And that's really the same kind of contrast we see between Brown and Moreno. If it's Brown, this is a largely pro-environmental person. If it's Moreno, this is going to be a very stark, you know, return us to the heyday of fossil fuels kind of senator.
Moreno, he's a car dealer, right?
Right. So he sold these cars, and apparently the thing he wished he could sell at his car dealership, you know, were more of those, 1970s era, you know, sort of Cadillacs that you could fit in, you know, an entire family in and got 8 miles to the gallon. It's really stark. I mean, we hear a lot of anti-electric car talk from the Republicans these days, even though Ohio has a massive electric car battery plant being built and you know, thousands of jobs at stake. But he goes a step beyond that rhetoric to literally, you know, saying there should be no incentives, no standards whatsoever for fuel efficiency.
And David, explain why the U.S. Senate race in Ohio could be important to the nation when it comes to Congress and party politics.
Well, we're looking at a really, really big, ugly, bruising battle for this Senate seat simply because it shapes up as the most competitive race in the nation. And, you know, right now the Senate is effectively 51 Democrats, 49 Republicans. The Democrats are certain to lose the seat in West Virginia as Joe Manchin exits the stage. So effectively, we're looking at a tie Senate. If the Republicans can win this seat in Ohio, they are highly, highly likely, almost certain to take control of the entire Senate. And think about this for a moment. In the last decade in Ohio, Democrats running statewide are 1-31. One win, 31 losses. Sherrod Brown is the one. And so that is what makes this race what it is. He has been the only Democrat who can keep his head above water in Ohio. And Republicans obviously see opportunity in that 1-31 record.
Dan, as David just mentioned, the Democrats control the Senate now by a very slim margin. The 2024 election could certainly change that. What are the implications of that for climate policy? Are you with us, Dan? I'm not sure if you're unmuted. Okay. Well, David, let's shift gears just a little bit while we wait to figure out what's going on with Dan's microphone. How have talk to us a little bit about President Biden's climate policies and how they compare.
Can you hear me?
Oh, Dan, you're back. Okay, we'll go to Dan. Sorry about that. I don't know what happened. You know, Zoom's your friend until it's not. So, Dan, what are the implications of this Senate race for climate policy if the control of the U.S. Senate changes?
I fear Dan may have muted himself.
Oh, Dan. Okay. We heard Dan for just a moment. Okay. Dan, are you with us?
Oh, goodness.
Okay. Okay. Well, he's gone. Okay. Well, David, we will keep going, yes, and try to get Dan back. Talk to us about the difference between the climate policies of President Biden and how those compare to former President Trump.
Well, I think the contrast here is really stark when you, not just in acknowledging a climate crisis, but in what it means. For President Biden, it means opportunity. You know, he talks about this as a job opportunity. You know, those electric vehicle battery workers who are going to come online in the middle of Ohio, you know, those are thousands of jobs that, you know, really derive from the notion that we can do things better, we can do this another way. You know, what Trump has talked about is the climate change hoax. And it's not merely that, you know, he is resistant to addressing it. He's resistant to acknowledging that it exists. And that is a really stark contrast. And on a mini version, Sherrod Brown and Bernie Moreno do the exact same thing. I mean, Brown openly talks about, you know, literally says climate change is here and now we have to respond. Bernie Moreno talks about the threat of, you know, government mandates.
Dan, can you hear us now? Okay, I thought Dan was back, but Dan's not back. David, how have President Biden's policies been received? I mean, you mentioned there's a stark contrast between his policies and his approach to climate as compared to former President Trump, but there are plenty of people who haven't been happy with everything he's done, right?
Well, the challenge for President Biden really is that we tend to respond to presidents and presidential candidates on feelings, not facts. And, you know, what that means for him is, you know, he has a boatload of policy achievements. You know, he's got an infrastructure bill that's literally going to make sure that the folks of Cincinnati can get over the river to Kentucky. And, you know, he has a plan directly addressing things like climate change. But He doesn't make people necessarily feel, you know, the sort of the inspirational lift or, you know, the passion that some other presidents and presidential candidates do. And what's striking, of course, on this issue and so many others, you know, Donald Trump is all feelings, you know, literally never facts. And, you know, you think about his signature issues, you know, the folks go to his rallies and they chant build the wall. And there is no wall. It's not about facts. It's about feelings. So it's a heck of a lot easier to sort of fight the climate change battle with the feelings that this is a hoax and you can ignore it than it is to fight it with the facts that this is going to take a major shift in how we do everything. But, you know, the carrot that President Biden talks about, of course, is and Sherrod Brown does as well, that there are jobs to be had in fighting climate change. There are jobs, you know, to be had in moving toward green energy. It's just a little bit of that, you know, sort of fundamental political challenge of the rewards are far in the future. They're vast. They're, you know, literally, you know, planet shaping and life shaping, but they're far in the future. And you have to keep people focused on that, you know, when it's easier to complain, you know, that, well, electric cars don't necessarily, you know, have the same, you know, range. You know, you can't necessarily drive 500 miles in one. You know, it's so much, you know, of that asymmetry between what you're experiencing now and what lies in the future.
We're talking about the impact Ohio's U.S. Senate race and presidential race could have on climate policy. Do you have questions or comments about climate policy? Give us a call at 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Dan, do we have you on the line now?
You do.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. We went old school telephone, so thanks for your patience with us, Dan. I don't know what happened there. What I was hoping to ask you earlier, you know, earlier in the conversation, David was talking about how Democrats control the Senate by a very slim margin. The 2024 election could change that. What are the implications of that for climate policy?
It's this binary where you have kind of, you know, option A and option B, and they are so different, it's almost like you're living in different worlds. You have a scenario in which President Biden could be reelected, Democrats could take the House and could hold the Senate, and in that scenario, you've seen narrow majorities in the House and Senate being able to pass really significant environmental and climate legislation. You could also look at a scenario in which Republicans win that trifecta. You know, they win the presidency, the House, and the Senate. Or even just winning one of those three, it would make it so that no significant climate legislation would likely pass. And if they're able to win all three, you could see this substantial unwinding of what President Biden has done these last few years, which is, you know, one of the track record that he's assembled on climate and clean energy is a lot. Just the Inflation Reduction Act alone, and that's just part of a record on these issues.
Well, but climate, there are plenty of climate activists who are unhappy with some of the things President Biden has done too. Dan, do you think that will factor into all this?
I think that the pushback that you see about some parts of the Inflation Reduction Act, some of the things that the Biden administration has done on, say, permitting for oil and gas and things like that, is just kind of normal pushback. You will see advocates who will, you know, are not going to get everything they want, even when they nominally agree with an elected official. But people who are environmental advocates or are clean energy advocates are able to get more from this president and from these last couple of years than they have from any president ever. So it is, those concerns exist, but in the grand scheme of things, it's I can't see that being a really significant barrier.
Dan, if former President Trump were to win the presidential election in November, what are his climate policy priorities expected to be?
One of the fascinating things about having a former president who is not the incumbent running is we know exactly what he wants to do, and we have a pretty good idea of how he would go about it. And we also have heard him talk about what he would do. But so when President Trump was, when he was president, the U.S. withdrew from the Paris Agreement. So this leading economy withdrew from the world's most important and most substantial climate treaty. And you can just kind of go down the line in terms of climate, clean energy, and also just fossil fuel policy. Even though the U.S. is already the number one producer of oil and gas in the world, President Trump likes to talk about increasing oil and gas production and emphasizing oil and gas production. President Trump will go out of his way to talk about how he doesn't like wind power, how he doesn't like electric vehicles. So it is, I mean, it is, the scale of the contrast is just, it's, you know, it's so great. It's, it is almost like we're facing a race between almost opposites on some of these issues.
And David, what kind of congressional support would former President Trump need to enact those policies that Dan was just talking about?
Well, as Dan just said, one of the really fascinating things about the state of Congress is, A, it is so evenly divided. There's, you know, there's barely any difference between the size of the Republican and Democratic caucuses in both the House and the Senate. But it's also so deeply divided. You know, think about this. If you look at just the Senate, for example, the Republican with the most pro-environmental voting record is Lisa Murkowski, and she votes against the environment 80% of the time. And once Joe Manchin leaves the Senate, the Democrat with the lowest support of the environment gets about 75%. That's John Tester, about 75% pro-environment. So the gap between the two parties, there's literally no one, you know, who's going to be in between, you know, so there's no middle ground. And, you know, just as Dan was saying, it just matters tremendously. If one party runs the table of the House, Senate, and presidency, they can move policy just massively toward, you know, a protective long-range strategy or toward, you know, a set everything on fire strategy. If neither party wins all three, what you get is the status quo. You get exactly where we are. or, you know, sort of a treading water effect.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dan, what about if, I mean, I know we're talking about a lot of different hypotheticals, but what about if President Biden does win re-election, but Republicans win control of the Senate? What could that mean for the Biden administration's climate policies?
The outcome there would be, I think, an opportunity to pass some things that hold appeal to Republicans, but not much. I mean, one of the issues you hear talked about as an area of common ground is making it easier to get permits to do energy projects, whether that be interstate power lines or power plants. You know, this is called permitting reform. There's been little progress on that. That would be something. If we had a split like you're describing, we would hear people talking even more about permitting reform, because some Republicans would support that. But there are not that many issues where a President Biden would want, and that a Republican Senate would want. So it would be this back and forth of neither side really being able to do much of anything.
David, do you expect climate change to be a big part of the Senate campaign in Ohio? How much are voters tuned into the issue?
I think it'll come up a bit just because it's in the category of demonstrating massive difference between the candidates. I mean, you know, campaigns fundamentally are about contrast, so I think it will come up because these are two candidates who see things exactly the opposite. But an awful lot of things fall into that category. Reproductive rights fall into that category. You know, perspectives on unions and collective bargaining fall into that category. So I think it will be in the mix. You know, it's probably not going to be issue one very often, but I think it falls into that category of showing that these are really diametrically opposing candidates. This is not a situation where, you know, one looks an awful lot like the other and it doesn't much matter which way you choose. These are two fundamentally different views. You know, Sherrod Brown believes in climate change and believes, you know, in the environment as a priority. Bernie Moreno is almost to the point of just open hostility toward the notion that environmental concerns should factor into our behavior and to our governing.
Dan, what do you think? How big an issue do you think this is going to be? How tuned in do you think Ohio voters are when it comes to climate policy?
I think that this is something, especially for Sherrod Brown and the issues he will talk about in this race, is not at the top of the list of things that he thinks will hold appeal to voters that are undecided, that could go either way or could maybe decide whether to vote or just stay home. And this is normal for climate change. It is not a top issue. And speaking as someone who writes about this a lot, this is nothing new. It's been going on for as long as I've been writing about this. What will be interesting is how the campaigns will talk about this to the voters for whom it is really important. Because there is this whole issue of mobilizing people who do care about this. But that's a matter of kind of slicing and dicing the electorate and having some specific messages aimed at specific groups. Mm-hmm.
Dan, what about when it comes to electric cars? This was something that David mentioned earlier when we were having our technical problems with you, but do you expect electric cars will be a talking point in these debates or ads? People, there are a lot of strong feelings about electric cars.
So that's one of the things I'm really interested to see, because electric cars are this jobs bonanza for Ohio. Ohio is a leading automotive industry state. You have a major joint venture with GM. You have Honda building a really big battery plant. The shift to EVs could be a net positive and could be a substantial net positive for Ohio. So I would think Sherrod Brown would talk about that. I'm interested to see how Bernie Moreno talks about it. I can't imagine he'd say, we don't want those Honda jobs. We don't want those GM Ultium cells battery jobs. But how does he talk about it? I don't know. And that's something I'm going to be watching closely.
David, the Biden administration last November released the nation's fifth national climate assessment, and that stated the effects of rising temperatures are already, quote, worsening across every region of the United States, end quote. If this isn't a top issue for Ohio voters, should it be?
Well, it certainly should be, and it's a good illustration of how you get exactly an opposite perspective depending on how you cast your vote here. And you know, it is an issue for the health of the planet. It's an issue for the economy, as we've been saying. You know, it's a fundamental issue of whether you see the government having a role in, you know, sort of protecting us from, you know, what would be a cataclysmic, you know, continuing set of events, or if you just want to roll the dice. And you know, you couldn't get a stronger contrast than you have between these candidates and between, you know, President Biden and Trump.
What do you think, Dan? Is this something that should be a bigger issue for Ohio voters?
Yeah, it should be. I think that if, as far as kind of issues that are relevant to the future of for our lives and for our children's lives and grandchildren's lives, this is number one or right up there. So there is this ongoing challenge of, people just don't want to talk about this and don't want to explore it deeply. Maybe because it's scary, and there is just a lot of entities out there and people participating in this conversation about climate change that try to muddy the waters and make it obscure some of the essential reality we're facing. So yeah, it's not going to be a top issue, and it really should be. Mm.
But, you know, let's be clear, at the Moreno rally that Trump held, you know, the context of him talking about, you know, the bloodbath that was coming was initially talking about electric vehicles as a threat to Ohio, as a threat to, you know, the auto industry and everything. So at some level, we may inadvertently have a great climate change debate just simply because, you know, Trump portrays it in such cartoonish, cataclysmic ways that he enlivens the debate, you know, and accidentally, you know, puts some substance into the conversation.
Dan, what do you think it would take to get more Ohio voters interested in the climate and climate policy?
I think over time, as you see the actual ramifications of climate change, as you see more extreme weather, as you see crop yields being affected and just other, just kind of as pocketbook issues and as just kind of quality of life issues begin to be affected, which we're going to see more and more, I don't see how that couldn't lead to greater engagement from voters on these issues.
Well, I've been talking with Inside Climate News Midwest reporter Dan Guarino and University of Cincinnati Associate Professor of Political Science David Niven. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Asiya Johnson. Technical director is Marshall Verbsky. If you miss our program live, you can subscribe to Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thank you so much for listening.